I want to start the readings for Purim tonight and continue Thursday night. And so that we can have a better understanding of what it is that we're celebrating. Purim celebrates the defeat of Haman, who's the type of the evil one, or the Antichrist, or your head. And it celebrates the victory of Mordecai as a type of Christ, and it celebrates the beauty and the attributes of Esther, who's a type of the bride. To see the typology of Haman, he was what's known as an Amalekite. And the Amalekites, beginning, they were the first people to attack Israel as they left Egypt, and they were the last people to attack Christ before his crucifixion in the person of Herod. Herod was an Amalekite. And so the Amalekites are the perfect type of you. From Moses and the Exodus all the way to Herod and the cross. And if you can see the full spectrum of their attack, you'll see the full spectrum of how you can defeat the evil one. So that's what we're going to look at. Okay? So everybody got a Bible? We're gonna meet from at 2 o'clock on Saturday. And remember that the fast of Esther is a fast that's from sunrise on Saturday until we declare the fast is over. It's usually about 4:30 or 5 or something like that, instead of at sunset. We're getting a little better. We used to wait and declare the fast over about like 10 in the morning or something.
That was when you used to smoke.
Yeah.
Although you sort of are now.
Yeah, but I didn't. It wouldn't bother me.
I don't think so.
There's no food and no smoking, no coffee. The only thing you can drink is, the only thing you can ingest is water. Okay, and it's only from sunrise to probably about 4:30 or 5 when we'll have the feast. The meal on Saturday afternoon is, it has to have at least two aspects of it. One is the Purim foods. It included some kind of either boiled beans or peas, because that was the main diet of pulse, which was that Daniel ate in the king's palace. And the three-cornered dessert known as Haman Tashin, or Haman's ears. And so whatever else we have, we need to have that. So what we'll do is we'll meet like this in this configuration. Then we'll break, say, at 4:30 and start setting, and we'll break the fast at about 4:30 then. And we'll start setting up the table, the Seder table, etc. And then as soon as we eat, we'll have another little break, and then we'll break down the stuff, and we'll sit around and hear. You know, I mean, if you're working, you're exempted from...
I'll probably eat blood sugar or something.
Yeah, you're exempted from the fast if you're working.
Can I take my vitamins, or at least my chromium? Because I will get really wrecked.
Yeah, vitamins are not foods. You can take your vitamins.
Harry, you're so pleasant normally.
I do have food.
Since I stopped smoking, if I don't eat a little something for breakfast and something for lunch, my blood sugar.
Just eating before sun.
It's unpleasant when people get drunk.
Yeah, we'll monitor that a little closer this time. Let's go to Exodus 17. In Exodus 16, they provided the manna and the quail, and then in the first part of Exodus 17, the water, they provided water miraculously out of the rock. And then in Exodus 17, verse 8, then came Amalek. Now, Melech is the Hebrew word for king. And so, Amalek can be translated as false king. And Amalekites can be called translated as those of the false kingdom. Have we talked about the Redeemer? I mean, what redemption means and the redemption, the kinsman, nearest kinsman, Redeemer, and all that.
With Ruth, mean?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You have to see that your. I mean, this is one of the reasons this feast isn't kept by any. I mean, it's not even kept by the Jews hardly anymore, but it's certainly not kept by the Christians. It's because you cannot escape the understanding that your brain, your mind, is the Antichrist if you understand this feast. This is the clearest understanding that Amalek, or that your mind is the Antichrist. Your emotions are not yours. Your mind, your emotions are all those of the usurper on the land. And the kinsman redeemer, we have been redeemed by his blood, but if he doesn't occupy the land, then under the law, the redemptive land goes back to the false usurper. He just in other words, if the near kinsman redeemer pays the price but doesn't occupy the land, it's worthless. He has to pay the price and occupy and use the land. That's the law. So that sort of obviates this once saved, always saved thing. I mean, this makes you see that what salvation is the beginning stages of redemption. But then he must occupy and he has to go to war with the usurper on the land. And the usurper on the land is Amalek. And so from Amalek now, what we're just about to see, all the way to Herod, all the way to you, you are the usurper on the land. Your body chemistry is made up almost exactly of what the earth is. 70% water. Is that right? Is the body 70% water?
Yeah. I thought it was
85.
No, it's. I bet it's. I think it's exactly right within the same.
Yeah.
It's the same trace elements. The same. I mean, you are the land.
The ocean water.
The salt water, right? You are the land. And it's had a usurper on the land, and his name is whatever your name is. The usurper has never really been. He's illegal. And so salvation is not a matter of having this usurper be born again. Salvation is kicking the shit out of the usurper. Not just kicking him, but killing him. Getting him off the land so the rightful owner can occupy the land. You understand? So, I mean, it's not a matter of the usurper getting better or the usurper having ideas about stuff or the usurper understanding or not understanding the scriptures or the usurper, you know, any of the other crazy thing. It's a matter of kicking the fuck out of the usurper.
There goes that.
Run it back.
He's the
F-word
again.
So that
would
have pitched Patterson.
Israel is now out of Egypt. Israel, do you understand? Amalek doesn't even mess with Israel as long as it's in Egypt. As long as you're in the world, he doesn't give a shit. As long as you're in Egypt and trying to play Pharaoh's games, he doesn't care about anything. He's not even there. You know, you're so occupied with the usurper doing stuff and the usurper trying to get. You can't get redeemed in Egypt. It's impossible. You have to get out of Egypt to be redeemed. Then, the first thing that happens when you get out of Egypt is Amalek attacks. Got it? Who attacks? You attack. And you attack with your ideas, your opinions about life. You try to bring all of your value systems into the kingdom. And that's Amalek attacking the seed. That's Amalek attacking Israel. So really, Amalek is just values.
Mm-hmm.
Understand that a little bit? Then came Amalek. Verse 8. See this right here? Rephidim. That's where Amalek first attacks. Just before you get to the understanding of the Mount Sinai, he starts coming at you because Amalek cannot permit you to know the law. So 99% of the people that name the name of Christ have never gotten to the law because Amalek attacked them and won.
I just had an argument with a guy the other day about this very thing. They don't know the law.
Therefore, they can't repent.
Okay, but not knowing the law. When you say you don't know the law, explain. When you don't know the law, what do you mean?
I write unto you that know the law, this law here.
In other words, they haven't read and
they haven't searched
Leviticus, right?
Or the rest of you.
Yeah.
They haven't understood the 613 laws.
I just want to make sure that's what you were talking about, because that's the beat this guy to a pulp.
Did you have fun doing it?
No.
He lies. He lies.
What is the law?
What? I was still certain that okay. I knew it was wrong.
So it's like our opinions, like when we're doing individuality, you know, this is what I think about this, or this is what I think about that. That's what keeps us from...
That's Amalek.
That's what here keeps us from hearing what God thinks.
That's good. That keeps you from hearing the law.
Okay.
Okay, and if you don't hear the law, then your mind and mouth can never be shut up.
Okay.
And Moses said unto Joshua, choose out men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in mine hand. Now, Moses, whenever Moses is used, Moses is this isn't my invention. This is something that goes back to before Christ and all the way up through all the Christian scholars. When Moses is talked about, it's Moses is now preparing to be the law. You understand? And so Moses, he's standing on top of a hill. Well, let's go. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. Now, what the scholars say about this is that
big props.
Moses having his hand up, it's the idea that the only way to win or beat Amalek is with the law.
And his hand was somehow representative of that?
Yeah, it
is. Moses.
Moses is the law, but the raising of his hand means that it's active. And it came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed, and when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And there's all kinds of talk about, you know, the idea that he's, first of all, he's sitting on the stone, the rock of witness. His hands are raised in the shape of a cross, which represents the law fulfilled. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. And the Lord said unto Moses, write this for a memorial in a book and rehearse it in the ears of Joshua. For I will utterly put out of the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. For he said, because the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. In other words, every generation has to defeat Amalek. Now, Jehovah Nisi is it should, Jehovah is a bad translation, as we've talked about. It should be Yahweh Nisi. But Nisi means, what that says is God is our only label. Nisi means banner, but it could be label. So again, it's you're an I am people. There's no modifiers. There's not I am white, I am black, I am male, I am female, I am this, I am that. I'm not Jew nor Greek. I'm not pretty or... that's obvious. It's Jehovah Nisi or Yahweh Nisi. God is my only name or my only banner. There's no other modifiers. I am. And that is what causes... Well, that's, first of all, for God to be named Yahweh Nisi, it's you have to know it's finished.
Yeah.
It has to be total, done, finished.
You see spirit instead of flesh.
It's, so therefore, even at this point in the discomfiting of Amalek, it was the picture of Christ, the final discomfiting of Amalek in Herod.
So did the war of the generations stop at Christ?
No. If only if you recognize it.
This may be kind of weird, but is it kind of like each, it's like generation to generation, it's almost like the child in their own way has to defeat him, and the young man, and then the father, and I guess that's the end of the Adamus.
No. Because it's the child. The child is the believer in Egypt. The young man is the adolescent is the believer in the wilderness. The young man is the believer here. You cross the promise.
So the adolescent is really the one that has to.
Well, the fight is constant from adolescence, but he is finally defeated in that metaphor. I write unto you, young men, for you are strong and you've overcome the evil one. Okay, everybody got that picture? Let's go to 1 Samuel. Starting in verse chapter 14, verse 47.
So Saul.
Now, everybody remember who Saul is?
Yes.
Okay. So Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against all his enemies in every side, against Moab, against the children of Ammon, against Edom, against the kings of Zobah, and against the Philistines, and whithersoever he turned himself, he vexed them. And he gathered a host and smote the Amalekites, and delivered Israel out of the hands of them that spoiled them. Now the sons of Saul were Jonathan, and Ishui, and Malchishua. How'd you like to have that for a name? And the names of his two daughters were these, the name of the firstborn Merab, and the name of the younger Michal. And the name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz. And the name of the, and the name of the captain of his host was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle.
Ner,
Uncle Abner.
Little Abner.
Are you making fun of the holy word?
Yeah.
This is not going to be pretty, said
Uncle Ner.
And there was sore war against the Philistine all the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he took him unto him. I don't care. Samuel also said unto Saul. Now, Samuel, in each of the kings of Israel, there was a prophet that was appointed with the king. And Samuel was the prophet to Saul.
He wasn't the prophet for David.
And David, I think he, for part of David. But this, now it gets interesting. You know, most of you have read this, but maybe we'll see something new in it. Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore hearken thou unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. Remember that. We just read that, right? Now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. And Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. Is there something funny here?
Is this the bad? Word.
He's reading ahead.
Well, please pay attention to what is said here, because it includes like screenplays. It includes things like sorcery. So please pay attention to this. This isn't kid stuff, okay? And Saul said unto the Kenites. Now the Kenites were who?
They helped him out.
But who were they? The Kenites were Jethro was a Kenite, Moses' father-in-law. And they showed kindness. And Caleb was a Kenite, who was Joshua and Caleb were the only two that made it into the...
Wow. So like friend of the bridegroom
and
kind of guy.
Caleb was the friend of the bridegroom. That's the best that Adam can be, is a Kenite. And a Kenite, by definition, if you can hear this, is one who knows the vanity of all things. So that becomes the friend of the bridegroom. Amen? All right. And Saul... What?
I was just thinking about the best man and how that, in the type, that kind of feels similar.
And Saul said unto the Kenites, go, depart, get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until thou comest to Shur, that is over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive and utterly destroyed all of the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and of the fatlings, and of the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, it repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me, and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul, come to Carmel, and behold, Carmel, and behold, he set him up a place, and is gone down, and passed on, and gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. And Samuel said, what meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Now, this is what... Without the preaching of the cross, this is what man will automatically do. You will hear all this crap in the name of religion, how somebody has transformed their talents into the... It all has to go to the cross. It all has to die. You understand? What, you know, I've done what you said, Lord, then what meaneth this bleating of the sheep I hear in mine ear? Well,
you kept what you thought was good.
Well, you can hear him. He heard the sheep and the oxen that were with him. Just like it would be obvious with discernment if somebody thinks that they have you know, spare something to, instead of slaying it utterly. Then Samuel said unto Saul, stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord hath said to me this night. And he said unto him, say on. And Samuel said, when thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed thee to be king over Israel? And the Lord sent thee on a journey, and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and did evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said unto Samuel, yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. Now this is the important point. He thinks that he's done the right thing. Understand? And Saul said unto Samuel, yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and I have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. And Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he also hath rejected thee from being king. Now, I mean, do you understand it? Everything has to go. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Why? Because it's sorcery. Because in rebellion, you obey not, but you scheme and plan something as if the Lord needed something. You have a plan. You have something that needs to be done. You have...
Well, that sums up religion.
That's right.
That's modern day... I mean, I don't know about ancient religion, but that's modern day religion all over the place.
That's right. That's why they don't study Pearl, because they'd have to read about Amalek. And Saul said unto Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord in thy words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Now therefore I pray thee, pardon my sin, and turn again with me, that I may worship the Lord. And Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with thee, for thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord hath rejected thee from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned about to go away, he laid hold upon the skirt of his mantle, and it rent. And Samuel said unto him, the Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. And also the strength of Israel will not lie nor repent, for he is not a man that he should repent. Then he said, I have sinned, yet honor me now, I pray thee, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and turn again with me, that I may worship the Lord thy God. So Samuel turned again after Saul, and Saul worshipped the Lord. And then said Samuel, bring you hither to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came unto him delicately, and Agag said, surely the bitterness of death is past. And Samuel said, as thy sword hath made women childless, so shall thy mother be childless among women. And Samuel hewed Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. And then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house, to Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. And nevertheless Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord repented that he had made Saul king over Israel.
So in 31, Samuel turned again after Saul. Does that mean he said, okay, okay?
It's one of the big mysteries. Nobody knows whether or not, I mean, we know that he was rejected as being king, but we don't know whether or not he was rejected from the kingdom.
Because, I mean, I think about, you know, when you talk about Melchizedek and the role of priest and an intercessor, I mean, that's what it looks like is happening. I mean, it's like Samuel, or I mean, Saul couldn't, I mean, if Samuel didn't have mercy upon him or whatever, he was doomed.
Now, when it says rejected the word of the Lord, that he rejected it, and then the Lord turned from him, so how many times did he reject him? Is that the deal about the three times?
No, that's something different. No, the Lord rejected him because he didn't obey the voice to destroy Amalek.
I never noticed before in verse 24, I mean, he was a respecter of persons.
Yeah. Well, please hear this. All of Agag must be hewn in pieces. I mean, now the next thing that takes place is David is anointed king. David being the type of Christ, the type of Messiah. That's what must take place in you, that the government must be on his shoulders, no longer on yours. That's why, I mean, can you see why Christ had to make it? It had to be that you picked up the cross, that you abandoned yourself, that you take no thought for tomorrow. I mean, there's no other way. Because otherwise, the Amalekite is so insidious that he will masquerade as a believer. Does everybody see and understand perfectly? Anybody? But your silence is going to condemn you if you don't have. Are you going to save anything? Not you.
No, I don't find anything.
Nothing in the saddlebags.
There's nothing left that I think is.
All right. Everybody agree? Let's go to.
You can do circumcision or something if you will. Viewing the flesh.
That's where they rolled off. Gilgal means to roll. They rolled the approach, reproach of Egypt off in the circumcision. That's we roll off the old man. And it's only after then that you can celebrate Passover. Purim comes exactly 1 month before Passover. Now Purim, the word God is not mentioned once in the book of Esther.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? What's not mentioned once in the book of Esther?
God.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I wasn't clear. Got you now.
God is not mentioned in the book of Esther. And it's because that the work of God in Esther is hidden behind the scenes, so to speak. Where in Passover, it celebrates God's openly, you know, destroying and working and death angels and God plagues and redemption, but not once in the book of Esther is God mentioned. Let's look at Numbers 14. And the men which start in verse 36. And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing a slander upon the land. Now what kind of slander did they bring? They said there was something that was too difficult for God to do. Is that like touch any of you?
That's like God says, forgive everybody. And get stubborn and say, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's like a little one.
Yeah.
I gotta start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere.
That's right.
What's, like, none of you would have, let's get some examples of slander. Can you think of anything that you've slandered?
It would have to be like an example of some area where I would say either God won't do it or God can't do it, and therefore I have to do it. I need to take effort to remember to do all these things, and if I don't remember to do it because God will not bring it to my mind at the appropriate time. That might be an example.
That's a little, another little example.
That might be an example.
That might be an example.
Which for me would actually be a big example.
No, it's just another little one. You got much bigger ones than that.
That's a big one to me.
Well, I know, but it's a little one to God.
What would be a bigger one?
Well, I mean, in my situation, I've come to the point several times where I just think God's forsaken me. He's not going to do it.
Yeah, that's the big one. God has forsaken the earth.
See, I never get that esoteric.
Huh?
I don't get that esoteric.
Well, of course you don't say that. You just,
like, I will oversleep without my alarm clock. It's mundane. It's
you really don't. Mundane.
You said you woke up 59 minutes late.
And the men which Moses sent to search the land, who returned and made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up a slander upon the land, even those men that did bring up the evil report upon the land died by the plague before the Lord.
What plague was that?
Plague?
Just a sickness?
It was the thing that nobody knows for sure, but they think it was something like, I mean, it was like instant leprosy or instant black plague, or, you know, it was...
No, that was the sons of Aaron.
And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of the men that went to search the land, lived still. And Moses told these sayings unto all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly. And they rose up early in the morning and got them up into the top of the mountain, saying, lo, we be here, and we'll go up unto the place which the Lord hath promised, for we have sinned. And Moses said, wherefore now do you transgress the commandment of the Lord? But it shall not prosper. Go not up, for the Lord is not among you, that you be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword, because you are turned away from the Lord. Therefore the Lord will not be with you. But they presumed to go up onto the hilltop. Nevertheless, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and Moses departed not out of the camp. And the camp is there in Kadesh Barnea, right in here, in this area. And they got... You know, when they saw the spies die, they said, okay, now we're going to go. Then the Amalekites came down, and the Canaanites, which dwelt in that hill, and smote them, and discomfited them, even unto Hormah. So anyway, now you see.
So they repented, but then...
Didn't do any good.
Well, they decided, this is what we need to do. Right. We're going to go do something.
Right. They repented, and then came up with a plan.
Exactly. We'll prove to the Lord that we're sorry.
No.
Discomfited. What does that mean?
Discomfited means to wipe out.
Cut their heads off.
Let's go to Deuteronomy 25.
Well, I found that probably the biggest thing about my sorcery, the slander, is that I said God is forsaking other people, other things that people are in a situation mm-hmm. and not that. And that's like the land is bad, so I have to do something on
it. Is that where victims come in?
You know what? I mean, yeah. But you've got to see. I mean, it's this thing that's in several people that I've asked that their first fruit offering be. Your first fruit offering has to be silence. Yeah. I mean, there's no thing that's There's no little thoughts, there's no little offerings, nothing. Silence. And just slay everything but the silence, because you've gotten yourself into a frenzy trying to figure things out. Deuteronomy 25. Well, let's just read a couple of these. These are kind of interesting. Start in verse 11. When men strive together one with another, and the wife of the one draweth near for to deliver her husband out of the hand of him that smiteth him, and then putteth forth her hand, and taketh him by the secrets.
Excuse me, the secrets?
Let it go, man. What it sounds like?
Yeah.
Stones.
She grabs his boys.
Talking about the stones, man.
She grabs his boys.
That's wild.
Your boys will stay in your neighborhood.
Then thou shalt cut off her hand. Thine eyes shall not pity her.
Whoa. Is that because she hit her feet, or because she grabbed him in the big parts?
In that place.
Now wait a second. So why is 13 right here?
Yeah.
Thou shalt not have in thy bag diverse weights, a great and a small.
I'm sorry.
It's just a gross structure here.
Life is bigger than the ride.
Thou shalt not have in thine house diverse measures, a great and a small, but thou shalt have a perfect and just weight. A perfect and just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. For all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Lord thy God. Now, remember what Amalek did unto thee by the way, when you were come forth out of Egypt. How he met thee by the way, and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord thy God hath given thee rest from all thine enemies round about in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee for an inheritance to possess it, that thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Thou shalt not forget.
Is that with the tie-in then? With
there's not necessarily a tie-in.
But that's like the weakest part of a person's body, though.
I know, but there's not necessarily a tie-in in these.
Okay.
What does all that mean?
Block what? I just read the secrets for another. The only thing I wanted you to read is 17 through 19.
I was trying to draw some sort of.
No, I just said.
Relief.
What would be the point of that one, though?
The secrets?
No, I know what those are, but I mean, why would they cut off her hand? For intervening or for the manner that she did it?
No, for intervening. It doesn't matter whether she grabbed the secrets or not.
Wow.
Okay.
also, too, it says, thou shalt blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven, thou shalt not forget.
I shall not forget to blot out the remembrance of Amalek.
Don't forget to blot out the remembrance.
No, but it's
Tuesday, blot out the
remembrance. No, it's one of the things in the scriptures that's called a doubling, and it's like, you better pay attention to it. That's why it's...
Okay.
All right, Judges 7.
Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges.
No, let's not read that. Let's. I don't want to do that anymore. That's enough for now. Take it, big guy.